And hello, hockey fans, and welcome to this week's edition of Three Takes. My name is Mark Scheig, and I am one of the writers for the Columbus Blue Jackets. I thought, it's August, the season's fastly approaching. We try something a little different this week. We're going to start to preview the upcoming season with different guests throughout the course of the next few weeks. And I thought we'd start with the Metropolitan Division, something that I'm familiar with. And joining us now, fresh from his summer vacation, is one of my favorite writers out there, Frank Saravalli. He's formerly from the Philadelphia Daily News, and he just joined up with TSN as one of their senior reporters. So, Frank, thanks for joining us. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thanks a lot for having me. Really appreciate it, and always looking forward to talking some hockey even in the summer.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your time as well, for sure. And, yeah, we wanted to talk about the Metro. You just take a look at what the teams have done. They've made all different kinds of moves to improve themselves. And now looking at it, it may be one of the hardest divisions in the NHL. You look at Phil Kessel's now in Pittsburgh, and TJ Oshie's in Washington, and Brandon Saad's with the Blue Jackets. And we haven't even talked about the New York teams yet. So first thing we wanted to throw at you was, is there a clear favorite to you? And then is there the possibility that five of these teams that we just talked about, can they all possibly make the playoffs from the same division?
Well, without a doubt, I think five teams certainly can make it from the Metropolitan Division. But really, it's hard to say that there's a clear favorite at this point. I think my odds-on team at this point, would probably be Washington, just based on the moves that they made. Of course, they were a tough out last year in the second round against the Rangers in seven games. And, I really like the play of Braden Holtby. If he can sustain anywhere close to the level that he played at last season, led the league in save percentage and goals against average in 14 playoff games. So he was excellent, and he, of course, set multiple franchise records. And then you look at the moves that they made to bolster their depth and bolster their offense. Certainly TJ Oshie, as you said, I think Justin Williams for a really affordable price makes a lot of sense for them for the next couple of years as well. So really like the moves that they made. But then in saying that, I think Pittsburgh as well is also, they've stacked up, certainly adding Kessel. They've fixed their depth a little bit. I know that they traded away Brandon Sutter, but some of the pieces they got back in that deal will certainly make them quite a bit deeper. And, I think the one thing for Pittsburgh, too, is if they can get back to having their shutdown line defensively, I think that's one of the things that they've sorely been missing. They were a really one-dimensional team for a while after that those cup runs in 2008 and 2009. And I think the one strange thing about Pittsburgh is that their defense is still pretty lacking at this point. They lost a couple guys that they certainly are not replacing, Christian Ehrhoff and Paul Martin as well. So, there's certainly holes on that roster. I think Pittsburgh is going to score bucket loads of goals, but the issue for them is going to be keeping them out of the net on the back end. So, there's certainly a top-heavy division, and I think the one thing that is pretty clear about the Metropolitan from my perspective is the sort of haves and have-nots. I think there's that group of the Capitals, the Penguins, the Rangers. I would certainly include the Islanders in that mix and the Blue Jackets. And, I should point out, especially talking to a Blue Jackets writer, that in the Philadelphia Daily News last year, I picked the Blue Jackets to win the division because I really liked what I saw from them in the playoffs 2 years ago, even though they were pushed out pretty quickly. I really liked the spark and the enthusiasm that existed with that team, and they just never really got off on the right foot in terms of injuries, and they certainly struggled all year because of that with their 500-plus end games lost. So, really, it's, and then you look at the other half of the division, and I think the other group of teams down there, the Flyers, the Devils, and the Hurricanes, are pretty far apart in that sense in terms of possibly, making a push this upcoming season to get into the mix because it is so top-heavy.
Yeah, it definitely is. It'll be really interesting to see how it all shakes out. I mean, injuries are going to be a part of it. And I think one of the biggest keys is just success within your own division, who can beat who, and that'll definitely separate them. And Speaking of the Flyers, obviously it's a team that you're very familiar with, and the next question we wanted to throw at you, you know, from, you know, being in the Columbus area and being in Western Pennsylvania, you hear a lot about the Penguins, the Blue Jackets, and the New York team. I haven't really heard a lot of talk about the Flyers, and they were just in the playoffs 2 years ago, and it seems from an outside perspective, they have gotten a little bit better with some of the moves they made. So what do you see has to happen for them to really make a serious push at this top five that's in the Metro?
The biggest thing that's been lacking for the Flyers certainly wasn't their offense or their ability to score goals. It was their puck moving and their play in their own end. And I think, you know, Ron Hextall did a pretty good job in terms of moving out some of the pieces that were there. He was able to trade Nick Grossman to Arizona. He did, of course, move Chris Pronger's contract, which gave them some more salary cap flexibility. They re-signed Michael Belzotto, who was a restricted free agent that had a tremendous second half of the season. But the real turnover for this team won't come until next summer, when they can finally move some of their defensemen that are in the final year of their deal and really kind of turn things over to their younger players, because that's the future of the Flyers, is their draft picks. You know, a lot of people think that Ivan Provorov is a guy that is going to be really close to making this year's team with 7 or 8 bona fide, you know, defensemen on one-way contracts. It's going to be really hard to crack that opening night roster for an 18-year-old. And, you know, there's a lot of other players, Travis Sanheim, Shane Goss is there, Samuel Morin, who are all sort of knocking on that door eventually for the NHL, but it's going to take some flexibility roster-wise in order to turn that over for this team. So I just don't see this year as being their year to get back into the playoffs, particularly with how tough the division is.
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned that there were tiers there. You had the top five and the bottom three, and even the bottom two teams, the Carolina Hurricanes and New Jersey Devils, they have pieces, and it's pretty easy to see that, you know, they are maybe a year or two or even more than that away. Can they honestly look at this year at all with some of the pieces that they do have? I mean, the Canes brought in a James Wisniewski, and they drafted arguably the best defenseman in the draft in Noah Hanifin if he starts with the team, or the Devils, you know, they have Corey Schneider, who's an all-world goaltender. Can either of them make any kind of a serious run at all?
I have a hard time seeing it. I mean, just with how strong the division is, you know, it's not physically possible or not feasible to get 16 in there. I can't see either one of those teams, you know, really pulling out of the bottom five in the entire league, because you look at some of the cellar dwellers from the last few years, and Edmonton is obviously vastly improved, and Buffalo, I think, you know, aside from maybe the Oilers, no team made greater strides this offseason in terms of an improvement. So, you know, you look at some of the worst teams in the league, I'd have to bet that New Jersey and Carolina, you know, these teams sort of made peripheral moves aside from their strong drafting. They're not even really going for it in terms of adding, you know, some pieces that could really finally help this team. So it's hard to say that those teams are going to be any closer for the upcoming season.
And we kind of wanted to go a little bit here and asking about some of the players that are on some of these teams, like some interesting players, you know, whether it be someone who's been there and maybe they got a new contract, or, you know, whatever situation they're in, or even a new player. It's going to name a team and a player, and just kind of wanted to get your sense on what should fans realistically expect from these particular players. And I wanted to start with the Rangers. You know, Derek Stepan got that new contract this offseason. Do you feel he's worth the money, and what do you expect to see from him this year?
So I think he's worth the money. I do. I think he was probably could have gotten a deal similar to what Ryan O'Reilly got in Buffalo. I mean, I think he ended up with 7 years and $52 million. Stepan was, you know, sort of that next tier under that. His possession numbers aren't very strong, but if you look at his point production, it's been pretty consistent the last few years. So, you know, it's one of those things that I think he definitely is worth the money, but I think New York as a whole is probably going to take a little bit of a step back, because they, you know, it's hard to replace guys like Carl Hagelin. They had so many salary cap constraints. that it was just hard to keep everyone together, and I think that was something that they couldn't do. So, I think Stephon's worth the money. I think he's probably going to be in that 55 to 60 point range for this upcoming season.
Yeah, I definitely like the contract too, for sure. And staying with New York with the Islanders, I think Kyle Okposo is someone who's interesting to me. You know, he's coming off the injury that he had and then the possibility of a contract for him. Just talk about, what do you expect from Kyle Okposo this year?
Last year he was in our TSN top 50 players in the league, and I know the injury plays a large role, but it's hard to say also that he'd be in that top 50 mix. I think a lot is going to be expected of him this year. Whether or not he can put together a similar campaign to what he had 2 years ago and also stay healthy remains to be seen. But, anytime you get the chance to, be a beneficiary from a guy like John Tavares, it's hard to say that, a guy's certainly going to be in for a tough season.
Yeah, really curious to see where he goes. And then, with Washington, we talked about earlier, mentioned TJ Oshie's the new acquisition along with Justin Williams, but a lot of people know Oshie as the guy who did really well with the shootouts, but then he had moments in St. Louis where he didn't do so well. So what can we realistically expect from TJ Oshie in a Capitals uniform this year?
Well, and he also wasn't a guy that put up phenomenal playoff numbers for the Blues. So, when the Blues have gotten to the playoffs the last few years, it seemed like their scoring had really dropped off the table. And, that trade was still head-scratching to me in some ways, because Oshie is one of those talents that, certainly don't grow on trees. And not to say that Troy Brouwer isn't a valuable commodity. It's just that, I think there's a lot of players that have his sort of skill set that make up the league. So I was surprised to see that trade go down the way that it did. But I think Oshie, when you just add in that talent dynamic that I mentioned on a really talented roster already, starting with Ovechkin and moving down the line, including Marcus Johansson and Nicholas Backstrom. You go down the list. With the Capitals, Burakovsky. I mean, it's an incredibly talented lineup, and they're going to be a really tough team to shut down. So I would expect Oshie's points to really skyrocket. End up in the 75 to 80 or 85 point range this upcoming season. I don't think that's not doable by any stretch of the imagination.
It'd be really interesting to see what he can do, like you said, with the likes of Alex Ovechkin. Turning to the Penguins a little bit here, I know all the attention goes to the Crosbys, the Malkins, and now the Phil Kessels of the world, but a guy that they acquired last year that they gave a first-round pickup for, I'm really interested in your thoughts on, what do you expect from a guy like David Perron this year? Like, he started out like a house of fire and then kind of faded a little bit there. You think he gets to pick it back up now, especially with Kessel on the team?
It's tough to say. He's been a really hot and cold player throughout his entire career. He has these flashes where he, these flashes of brilliance where you just say, wow, how is this guy not talked about more? And then you see him at other times, and it's almost like he's invisible. So, you would have to think that adding more talent with a guy like Kessel can only help in the trickle-down effect with Perron, because so much attention is going to be placed on some of their bigger names that you would think that it would open up more opportunities for him. But he's a guy that I'm a little bit sour on at this point, based on the way the year ended. And for a lot of the Penguins, I think that could certainly be the case. It's hard to remember when you think back to last season, and of course the Penguins did make playoffs, but the fact that they needed that win on the second to last day of the season, I think it was against the Sabres, just to sneak into the playoffs, and they had such a large lead and on a playoff spot. I think they made a trade with the Oilers at one point, and there was like a 1% chance that pick that they got, I think it was in that same deal, would end up not being lottery protected, and it almost ended up coming into play with the Penguins missing the playoffs. So, there was certainly a chance there at one point that the Oilers could have had another lottery pick as well.
That would have been crazy to think, for sure, that if that pick would have been the one that won Connor McDavid, and then they have another top pick, it would just be really amazing to see what the Oilers would have been like. We are talking here with TSN senior reporter Frank Saravalli, and we're continuing on with our interesting players. We're on to the Blue Jackets here, and someone like me be very interested in this one. You know, they made the trade last year, kind of caught a lot of us off guard, where they sent Nathan Horton up to the Leafs, and the Blue Jackets got David Clarkson back. You know, he's in an environment now where, you know, the media attention isn't going to be as great, and, you know, he could look at it like a little bit of a fresh start. So what can the Blue Jackets fans realistically expect from David Clarkson this year?
Let me ask you this. I didn't follow him too closely after the trade. How did he end up finishing the season? I know he was injured for a bit there, but did he play, what, 14 or 15 games with the Blue Jackets?
Yeah, about 10 to 15 games, and then he had that injury. I mean, he did... okay, didn't score a lot of points, but you could tell that there was a sense of relief with him.
I think the sense of relief, you know, is certainly getting away from that disaster in Toronto and signing there. I'm not sure that he'll ever end up being the player that he was at the Devils, and, you know, in a lot of ways, too, he cashed in at the right time in terms of his contract, you know, heading there after a career year, and you know, you always see players sort of drop off after signing that monstrous contract. And with Clarkson, you know, it's just such a different dynamic because I think Columbus is one of those teams that, you know, if they can really get off on the right foot and get going, his style of play, you know, he does play with a little bit of an edge to his game, you know, really could fit in quite nicely with that team because... you know, when I think back to Columbus from 2 years ago, and even parts of last season when they went on that incredible run, and I think it was December, they're a really tough team to play against, and he could certainly add to that as well. It really, for me, and certainly with the Blue Jackets in general, it's all going to depend on how good of a start they can get off to.
Yeah, the last 4 years, they've had... bad starts. It's put them behind the eight ball. I mean, 2 years ago, they were able to catch up, and they had the franchise best 10-1-1 in December, but they only gained 2 points in the standings because everyone else just kept winning. So they've got to find a way to be able to have a better start, especially in this division. So with the Flyers, team obviously you're familiar with, like we said before, Sam Gagne was somebody that they were able to acquire during the offseason here. So what can Flyers fans expect from him? I know he was a little bit maligned down in Arizona. Can he be a major contributor to this team?
I think he can because he does have the skills to do it. And I think the fascinating thing for me is, you know, how big of a chip does the Sam Gagne enter camp with? Because he's a guy that even when the Flyers traded for him this summer, they weren't, you know, quick to say, I think that we were on a conference call with Ron Hextall, and I asked the question, did you acquire Sam Gagne because he was a buyout target? And, you know, Ron Hextall was not quick to say, no, we really like him as a player and we want to keep him. The thought, I think, mainly at first was, when you're trading away Chris Pronger's contract and you're moving Nick Grossman, a guy who had 1 year left on his deal at $3.5 million, you're bringing back a guy, you know, at a similar number, and it doesn't really move all that much salary for you in the grand scheme of things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to look at that and say that, you know, they definitely wanted to keep Gagne as a player. And I think the more that they thought about it, they thought, okay, this is a guy that finished, I think, second on the Coyotes in points. You know, he has displayed flashes of brilliance in his own career as well, but for whatever reason has never been able to put it together on a consistent basis. You know, in some ways, I think he was probably his own worst enemy in that case. But, you know, the Flyers really do have a wide open spot on the left wing to play with Claude Giroux and Jake Voracek. And if he can just, you know, fill that void better than Michael Raffle did. Michael Raffle had a great season last year in terms of, if you look at his goal production over 60 minutes, he had first line capabilities in that sense. So he was a strong finisher on that line, which is what you need. And Gagne certainly has the talent, but if Raffle can provide that for some of the other lines for the Flyers, and sort of have that trickle down effect in terms of depth, Gagne could really end up being a valuable addition. He's on the last year of his contract. He is earning a pretty hefty salary for a guy that could have been a buyout target. And, you know, he's got to earn his next deal. So what better way to do it than playing with two of arguably the top, you know, 30 forwards in the league, in Drew and
Voracek. Yeah, actually, you know, kind of like the move. I saw him play in juniors. He definitely has the talent. If you put him in the right scenario, I think he can surprise a few people for sure. So we got two teams left. We got the Devils and the Canes. And with the Devils, you know, they did make an acquisition. They ended up getting Kyle Palmieri. And you kind of wonder, you know, if they're not going to go anywhere this year, you know, he was able to cash in a little bit. What can Devils fans expect to see from a player like Kyle Palmieri?
He's a guy that I didn't track all that closely. Like I said, my focus for so long before getting to TSN was on the Flyers. Mm-hmm. He was, did he come over from Anaheim?
I thought it was a free agent sign. I think Anaheim didn't re-sign him. I'd have to look back at that, but you know, either way, I think he was able. Yeah, Anaheim didn't want to sign him again, so he ended up over with the Devils on, I think, a 3-year contract, if I recall.
Oh, and if I recall, too, he has some local ties to New Jersey, so
yes, that's right.
That certainly helps as well. You know, I think for me, the biggest question mark, when I look at the Devils overall, and this just isn't necessarily, you know, Palmieri can certainly help, but he's not going to be a game changer for this team,
right.
I don't think. There's still so many holes in that lineup, and there's still quite a few older players that really need to pass the torch. They bought out Dynan Zubras. He's a guy that 37 years old, you know, to give up a spot for a younger player. They need to turn that roster over, so Palmieri will help. But for me, the guy I keep coming back to with the Devils is Corey Schneider.
Yep.
Can the Devils turn it around quickly enough that, you know, certainly goalies have a longer window than forwards or defensemen, but can they turn it around quickly enough for Corey Schneider's to still be at his best?
Yep.
And that, to me, is this team's biggest question mark. I know he's got some time on his deal, certainly, but he is 29 or 30 years old and really turned in a tremendous season last year, replacing a legend in Martin Brodeur. So not exactly the easiest thing to do, and he didn't really have a ton of help in front of him, and he was able to put up tremendous numbers. So can this team, and perhaps Palmieri is one of those guys that can help turn the tide and turn over that roster, because it certainly needs to get younger as well.
Exactly. And we have one final team here with the Hurricanes, and you know, a little bit of a head-scratcher for me as someone who covers the Blue Jackets was that trade last year that sent James Wisniewski over to the Ducks. And we ended up getting you know, Bill Carlson, a second-round pick, and Rene Bork back. And it didn't make sense at the time. A lot of fans questioned that move. You know, the more you think about it, maybe they were trying to get rid of that salary, or he wasn't, you know, maybe part of the future plans for the Blue Jackets. So ultimately, he got scratched in the playoffs for the Ducks and really didn't play very much. Now he's in Carolina. You know, he can produce points. He can help on a power play. I mean, can he be, you know, any kind of a game changer? Could he give them enough of a boost where, like, a Cam Ward or an Eric Staal or someone like that can, you know, maybe take them the rest of the way?
I have a hard time seeing it. You know, the fact that he didn't play a single game for the Ducks, if I recall correctly, in the playoffs, the fact that he was a healthy scratch for such a deep run and that they didn't see him to be any fit in their lineup, I know that that's a tough thing, especially when you go down that road mentally to work your way back into it. But, you know, to be honest, I was surprised that the Ducks were even able to move him, because I was putting together a list in the summer of all the players that could be buyout possibilities, and certainly Wisniewski was a guy that I checked in on and checked in with his agent, and I think they were just hoping for some sort of change of scenery, and, you know, it's nice to get that, but right. I think we've seen a bunch of players head to Carolina, a bunch of defensemen over the years that, you know, certainly looked better in other places and go to Carolina and seem to struggle a little bit. I think Von Hainsey's one of those guys that comes to mind. You know, he looks pretty good with the Jets and then ends up in Carolina and it's just a really tough road down there because, you know, they have their goaltending situation with Cam Ward, who is nearly impossible to move. Eric Staal is entering the final year of his deal as well. So there's, you know, I just look back at Carolina's roster over the last few years, and there's been very little change, really, since Ron Francis took over. It's mostly the same team that was assembled and has missed the playoffs all these years in a row. So, you know, I think part of it is financial. It's hard to move some of those contracts, and they're never going to be a team that spends a ton of money. They're a small market team, certainly with their own internal budget. But, you know, I'm disappointed from an overall perspective in terms of their changeover. You know, you would think that there would be some more drastic moves to try and improve this team and make them a contender in the Metro, and I just don't think they're anywhere close.
Right. Now, when I'm wrapping up here with Frank Saravalli from TSN, got one final question that may ultimately impact the Metro, but it kind of depends on, you know, what ends up happening here. There's a couple really nice players out on the market still, and Christian Ehrhoff and Cody Franzen that you know, are still out there. Now, I've had discussions with Ehrhoff's agent, and you know, the Blue Jackets made a lowball offer, and apparently a couple of other teams did, but nothing serious enough for them to consider. So, kind of wanted to ask, you know, why do you think they're still out on the market at this point? And, you know, could you see a Christian Ehrhoff eventually in a Blue Jacket sweater if they're able to find the cap room for it?
I think you could. And, you know, I think part of the deal with him was, yeah, his injury status and the games that he missed last year. I don't think anyone's questioning the talent that he has. I think the biggest thing that surprised me with this market this summer is, you know, how young some of these players are. Cody Franzen, 27 years old. It's his first year being eligible as an unrestricted free agent. He's a right-shot defenseman who's 6'5", and, you know, had more points last season than Matt Bolesky did. So when you add that up, and Bolesky, of course, was the, you know, big-name, you know, free agent heading into the summer, and, of course, ended up in Boston, but, you know, Ehrhoff is another guy. 2 years ago, he was one of those guys that was at the top of the food chain. And now you're looking at some of these guys and some of these big names that are left, and you're saying, are these guys really, really willing at a certain point to be entering contracts on a tryout basis? And I don't think that'll happen with guys like Friend, and they're still I think Ehrhoff is a guy that very well could be in that tryout camp. Possibly you go to a team that is closer to winning, contending team, so to speak, and you go into camp and see if you can earn yourself a deal that would put you in a really strong position on the team to, you know, 1 year deal for little money that could help you that team get under the cap. And also, if you have a really strong year and you're healthy, you can parlay that into a much bigger deal. I think Ehrhoff is only 32 or 33 at this point. So, you know, he's got some tread left on the tires. Certainly, it's a matter of staying healthy, and it's a matter of putting yourself in a situation that you could benefit down the line in terms of a future contract. So the best way to do that, of course, is playing with a contender. So these players are going to need to make decisions rather quickly. We're approaching mid-August, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Training camps open in almost exactly a month. So there's very little time left to try and sort this out and figure out where you can make your money and make it work under the cap for a team that's the right fit for you.
Exactly. And it'll be really interesting to see how everything pans out with these teams, with these free agents. And Frank, you definitely do wonderful work, and we really enjoy following you on Twitter at Frank_Saravalli, and we definitely appreciate your time tonight, you know, taking a little bit of time out of your summer to join us and talking about the Metropolitan Division. We greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and that'll do it for this edition of Three Takes, and we'll be back next week at this time, and we will have some more previews for you for the upcoming season.